completely different. The other part of my background is I'm the chair of the Massachusetts Breastfeeding Coalition, and I got interested in this because we recently had a big conflict when Governor Romney was in office over marketing of infant formula. I want to thank my co-authors, especially Ann Meerwood, who's in the audience here, and she's one of the co-chairs of Ban the Bags, which you'll be hearing about. And I have nothing to disclose, except I like breastfeeding. So you guys are probably familiar with the Nestle boycott. And that's what we had back in 1977, and this is what we have now, Nestle Good Start, and you see it's got this stuff, DHA and ARA, in it. So Nestle's a food company, so I'm not going to really talk about that, and they don't have very much market share in the U.S., although it's growing. So in the U.S., most of the infant formula is made by these two companies, Bristol-Myers Squibb, which makes Enfamil, and Abbott, which makes Similac. And that's 80% of all the formula in this country. But brand name formula, private label, is brand name formula costs 33% more than the private label store brands. And really, it's a very closed market, the infant formula market, and it's also has a unique economy to it. You know, there's a limited number of babies in the country, so really the only way to gain market share is to discourage breastfeeding. So it's within everybody's interest in this industry to impede breastfeeding. And the other thing that goes with the economics of formula is that they're able to make very high profits because once mother's milk dries up, they are forced to buy the product for the first year of the infant's life. So economically, they can charge, you know, huge profit margins just like cigarette companies can, cocaine, you know, other things where people are sort of forced to buy it after a certain point. I'm not saying infant formula is cocaine, but I just want to make that clear. So formula will never be breast milk, ever, no matter what you hear in the news. So these are microscopic views of formula and breast milk. There's all kinds of white blood cells and fat globules and all kinds of good, cool stuff, and this is nothing. So the real pinnacle of their marketing practice is these commercial diaper bags that they give new moms in the hospitals, and depending on how old you are, when I had my kids, which are only not that old, the bags looked like this, cute and stylish and kind of feminine, little bunnies on them and stuff. And now they have these stylish black unisex bags, which dads can carry around. And they don't have the label in a prominent place, but as soon as you open it, you'll see the label, or they'll have like a little metal tag with the label on it. So you can't miss that it's a formula bag if you're actually using it. And these are examples of what's in the bag. You see here Enfamil is written inside, and here it also says Enfamil Lipol on it. These are the kinds of things they'll put in it. Inaccurate breastfeeding information, they have just every trick you can imagine and many you can't even imagine. They take well-known books and like corrupt them and give them away. They have samples of this their products, bottles, various things. The idea is this will undermine confidence in many of the moms and their ability to breastfeed. Most U.S. hospitals give out the bags. To any mother, about 92 or 93% of hospitals give out the bags, and to breastfeeding mothers, about 70%. And it used to be even more ubiquitous than that. I have a map of just the East Coast showing the percent of bags, but you see the lowest we ever really get is 70 to 79%. They're still very, very common. They also, the industry will come up with other things that hospitals use, like these name tags for the bassinets for the babies, the measuring tapes, And all of these have subtle marketing messages. There was a lawsuit in 1995 where this came out. This was a training book from Abbott Labs. Never underestimate the importance of nurses. If they are sold and serviced properly, they can be strong allies. A nurse who supports Ross is like an extra salesperson. So they really are trying to sell the product by getting the nurses to hand the product to the moms, because this helps endorse that there's some kind of medical endorsement to the product, that health professionals support the use of this product. And they also, this is what they've been doing lately, co-opting professional doctors' organizations. This is a letter from the American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists about a new book that they're coming out, and this went to all their colleagues, and the book contains the formula coupon. They corrupted this book, the American Academy of Pediatrics New Mother's Guide to Breastfeeding. They excerpted it and are giving it away, a gift from Ross Pediatrics, which are makers of Similac. And this would be in the bags that moms would get. They, in their WIC nutritionist letter, big ad for Enfamil. So now they have some new products in the last few years, and these are the ones that have DHA and ARA, or AA, that's arachidonic acid, and deoxyhexaenoic acid, I think that stands for. Anyway, this is really a marketing scam. These are things that are found in breast milk, but they make them from algae and they put them in infant formula, despite having very scant evidence to back its use in full-term infants. It may have some therapeutic use in premature infants, but they say it makes the milk more like breast milk. And you hear mothers even say, oh, I want the formula that's like the breast milk formula. And it really, parents cannot tell the difference because the marketing is so good. And in fact, this has not been fully tested. There have been multiple reports of GI problems and neurologic side effects from these products. These are ones like Lipol and Similac Advance. And now this stuff is in everything. And they're even trying to put it in supplements for pregnant women. Develop your baby's immune system and brain just like breast milk. And this marketing is extremely effective. And here's an ad for this stuff, Expecta, that has the stuff in it too. Now they're trying to target what I call the yoga market. It's $31.99 for organic infant formula. You know, if you care about organics, you're probably breastfeeding. But, you know, maybe if you can get organic formula, then that's just as good, right? And now that we're trying to get these discharge bags out of hospitals, they are trying to put them in doctors' offices. The doctor is in, so is your free sample of Enfamil. Tear it out and take it in and claim your free samples. So again, turning doctors into marketing a product that does not have good health outcomes. Gifts from the office. I love this. The Lipol Breastfeeding Support Kit. That has formula in it. So these are seen when nearby hospitals stop distributing formula discharge bags. This is another free gift that includes more of this stuff that you could get for your mother's doctor's office. We had this conflict in Massachusetts where we became the first state to have a regulation that banned the hospital distribution of these marketing products. And that was, it went before our state's public health council, and then the governor's office forced it to be withdrawn. So it never got implemented. And that was back in 2006. And at the end of that saga, right after the ban got quashed for good, our governor at the time, Mitt Romney, announced a $66 million deal with Bristol Myers Squibb to build a pharmaceutical plant in Massachusetts. So otherwise, he really didn't care about infant formula, so we can't tie the two together. It sounds like that was part of it. So, but this got national attention, and they came up with all kinds of tricks, including this sort of biased fake survey of moms saying they all wanted their bags and no newspaper would publish it. They also had this like fake website with blogs about signing the petition about the ban. And interestingly enough, most of the people who blogged on the website, and this had nothing to do with us, they just came out of the woodwork and said, this website is a joke, this is anti-breastfeeding, this is obviously, you know, from the formula industry. And the website took down all those blogs and just had the blogs from the formula industry on it. So, but breastfeeding is fighting back. In the wake of all of this, a couple of months later, we launched Ban the Bags. You can go to banthebags.org, and Anne here, if you want to raise your hand, is the co-chair. New York City Public Hospitals banned all their bags in 2007. The City of Portland, Oregon is completely bag-free, which is amazing. The City of Cambridge, Massachusetts is now completely bag-free, too. And that's our logo. This is some of the promotional materials we developed during our big fight with Governor Romney. And if, you know, just asking the question, why are hospitals marketing baby formula, I think really speaks a lot about this issue. We had a big demonstration in May of 2006 at the State House. We made the case for getting rid of the bags. Actually, this was me in one of the meetings we had with the Department of Public Health about why the regulation should give out the bags. I said, look, you wouldn't give out coupons for Big Macs on the cardiac unit. And I don't really know how, but the Wall Street Journal picked that up and published that. So, but that really does send the message. People get it when they hear that. And I told you about that deal already. And the banning the bag movement is growing. And we have 17 hospitals don't have bags in our state out of 50. Oregon and Rhode Island may be completely bag-free. When Mothering Magazine, which is based in New Mexico, did an article on banning the bags, they actually could not find a bag near them because there are so few hospitals in New Mexico that have the bags left. So we really are making progress. We have been fighting with science. There's a GAO report on formula marketing. There's literature in the medical literature on how the bags undermine breastfeeding. There are several other studies that came out even just this year. Anne just has a study that has just come out as well. So what's next for industry? They are offering spa offers. So there was one, I couldn't find the picture, but they had like a woman with cucumbers on her eyes saying, do you want to be pampered? And if you just sign up for your bag, you might win a free spa trip. Now they're even going from hospitals to doctor's offices into the ultrasound offices to give out the bags. Now, bear in mind, these people can get your address, and they could send you the bag in the mail if they wanted, but it wouldn't be as effective because a health professional is not giving it out. So they really want a health professional to give it out. So that's our message. Thank you.
I'm on the technical review panel of the Global Fund, and one of the big issues they were debating at our last meeting was that people were trying to get formula back in the hospitals for the HIV-positive women, and it was slid into a couple of the proposals, and so the people who'd fought to get it out of the hospitals for so long were explaining why that was just a wedge that wouldn't help at all. Great presentations. I don't know whether we have we have a few minutes left for questions. Yes.
Do you have some references for the possible ill effects of this DHA and AEA? I'm out of the formula space in my life, but collaboration with like baby-friendly hospitals, since like nurses are human and get tired and sometimes resort to formula. You know, they're desperate crying babies, and you know, I mean, getting the baby on the breast right away is important. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, is there a collaboration here? Oh. I feel like the bags are still permeating, like you said.
Absolutely. We do a lot of work. We attack this from all sides, and Formula Marketing is just part of it. She's referring to the Baby Friendly Hospital Initiative, which is a WHO UNICEF initiative of 10 steps to successful breastfeeding. And you can get a certificate, earn a certificate saying you're Baby Friendly Hospital. There are only 67 in the United States out of over 3,000 maternity hospitals, so it's not widely implemented. Part of Baby Friendly is have the baby not be separated from the mom, so giving formula would not even be an issue for a nurse because the baby would be with mom 24 hours a day. So yes, we are working on that as well.
Yes, just a quick question for Jack. The 10 to 15% ingredient cost, that includes manufacturing costs as well?
No.
Okay, so the manufacturing goes on and then the market. So ingredients and then manufacturing.
Yeah, it's estimated, and that varies per contract, obviously, but it's been estimated it's somewhere in that vicinity for most regular drugs. A biological is obviously more expensive, but the manufacturing, I used to take my students at the Abbott Labs, and so it was like big dollars, and they'd have these warehouses full of these big cylindrical things of powder that they would mix, like cakes and things like that. And, you know, we're talking about the whole packaging from buying the raw materials, mixing it all together, the equipment, the personnel, and the packaging, maybe about 25% of the cost of the drug. And promotion, 25 to 30%. Profits, 25 to 30%. And you're not talking about much going into the actual drug, and particularly over time when you realize that marketing goes down tremendously after the drug secures a place in prescribing habits of physicians, it's very easy to work the argument that the prices should be cut dramatically, and we could cut patents to be a little more reasonable than a 20-year period.
Thank you.
I had a question, which is just to clarify, when you're trying to do group procurement of drugs, these countries, like in the Caribbean, they have national health systems, so that's why you can do that, right?
Yes, and in fact, some of the states in the U.S. have been trying to do it, and federal regulation prevents them from doing it. There's a whole active movement. It's fascinating. It's not the only, I mean, your comments about the baby-friendly hospitals, I think that movement has been more effective in developing countries in the U.S. There are a lot of ways in which the U.S. can learn from interventions we've been introducing for a couple of decades in developing countries. Yes?
Well, I was a stojo from breastfeeding center, and some of the stuff I have been to the meetings Tuesday with the market guides there.
No, they just
improved. No, I don't think they needed to be, because I think they're I think they were the in the generally recognized as safe category.
Yeah.
And so they were not subjected to clinical trials. Basically, you know, the infants are now guinea pigs and they're just waiting for reports of adverse events. And that's how they're getting it. By the way, as you're leaving, if anybody wants to be signed up on our email list, light traffic, and came in late, we've got a list here.
I have a question for Jack.
Yes.
So I'm one of those members of the media, and I end up talking to a lot of, especially cancer researchers who talk about this individualized treatment or therapy. And I fail to see, because they do talk about pharmaceuticals in that context, I fail to see a business model that's sustainable, doable, and it seems to me like a lot of fun. Can you talk a little bit about that?
I agree with you on that. I think it's a lot of hype and a lot of promise. Some of the science is advancing and it makes some sense in terms of the targeted therapies and using genomics to figure out before you're subjected to a powerful, dangerous substance to treat a disease when you're very vulnerable to any kind of environmental assault. Some of those calculations and things like that to try to figure out whether or not the basket is going to be helping you or you're going to spend $30,000 before it does. Those kinds of things are advancing and hold some good promise, but the business model around that and trying to talk about all this personalized medicine that we're going to be giving people in the future, it's very, very costly, added on to the cost of the pharmaceutical one. I don't think it's being presented very well at the present time. I've been looking into it and gathering some articles. At some point in time, I'd like to critique it, you know, through some interviews of the people who are trying to work out these things. But I think it's a long way off. And again, it's all in this. Give us more money for research and trying to help the public and all this, which is the marketing campaign that is moved from just buy our one drug to aren't we a great research? And you can see this in some of the changing in the DTC stuff. You watch a pharmaceutical ad and you say, hey, they didn't tell me about one of their drugs because they were telling me about how wonderful the company is, the image has.
Any other pressing questions?
Yes. I was curious why you thought, if you have any sense or science have any sense of why the pipeline has dried up after 25 years. It's not progress.
Which pipeline?
R&D
or
a
new
pharmaceutical? Real new pharmaceutical.
In the 1980s, with Ronald Reagan and Gordon Gekko out there at Greenies Group, the billion-dollar blockbuster was clearly looked at as the market. You know, bring out a drug for mass marketing, chronic disease, something that everybody has that will take no payment as, and promote it everybody and move in to making sure that you get that distribution network together. And whether you're talking about statins, antidepressants, PPIs, or Vioxx, or any of the COX-2s, or anything like that. You would basically, the model was you could get to $1 billion plus, you know, and we're talking about Lipitor at $20 billion, or Vioxx at $6 billion. Phenomenal, vast potential for, very high sales, and of course, once you secure the market, it's just raking in the barrels of money. That model neglected looking at other diseases in the same intense way, because the R&D was not directed that way. Multiple sclerosis, Parkinson's disease. from the people I've talked to, that they're surely not at the top. They've been really restricted in what they consider as their future terrain. And I think for a while, they were just recognizing that middle-class populations in other countries could be the market for the stuff that we have here. Now, consider, the middle class in India or the middle class in the east coast of China is larger than the whole population of the United States. They have an ability to pay, and you know, it's not more than 47 million people who are uninsured, because most of them are uninsured. But they'll pay out of pocket for drugs that they can handle their chronic disease management. I think these kind of forces and considerations just let the R&D stuff, you know, go by the wayside. Again, I've had as many discussions with scientists in many of the firms, but I just think it was what I refer to as the management fuck-ups. You know, they're people are very, very, very strategic, but sometimes they just don't think about things. And surely the whole industry, if you're talking to a financial analyst these days who's been looking at what's been happening with the revenues, the stock prices, and the profits, they're going to sit back and say, you know, Bloomberg.com is my best reference for not just drug safety, but recognizing that there's a lot of critique out there of the industry. It's very disappointing with the decision making that's gone on for more than a decade. And the pipeline issue is clearly in the center of the
Sorry, what website?
Bloomberg. Stock